Over the years, I've enjoyed talking to baseball people, and it's always a treat for me to talk to a former minor leaguer, a major leaguer from time to time. But minor leaguers, while they were in their minor league careers, almost always talk about the conditions of ballparks, of dugouts, of locker rooms, and often transportation is part of the subject. I've heard Bobby Dernbaugh and Buddy Gilbert of the Nashville Vols talk about long bus rides. I've heard Butch McCord of Nashville talk about going to a game in New York with the Baltimore Elite Giants and the bus caught on fire. I've heard Harriet Kimbrough Hamilton speak about her dad, Negro leaguer Henry Kimbrough, having to take over driving for the bus driver who got tired, and even having to stop and work on the bus himself when it needed repairs. He was a pretty valuable guy to have around. So transportation from town to town was anything but glamorous, and if anyone thinks any of those things that Bobby or Buddy or Butch related to me think that's glamorous, then I've got a baseball with a smeared signature that no one can read, but I'll sell it to you as Babe Ruth's. And we think of airplane travel these days. It came about only when it was less expensive than taking a bus. And trips between cities in the Southern Association, for example, were mostly by bus. A bus ride to Chattanooga would be less expensive than a plane ride in the 50s and early 60s. Well, when air travel was a long way off before becoming a glint in the Wright brothers' eyes, and much earlier than Orville and Wilbur made their innovative concept a reality, travel was often labor-intensive and often dangerous. Let me set up something that had a great influence on baseball, not only in the South, but across the country. Now, I'm going to take you back to before baseball was invented, as we know it, some semblance of how we know it, when it was a game called Rounders, or one-eyed cat, or so many other names, and mostly resembled the game of cricket, I think. There is a reason I'm beginning in the early part of the 19th century. It's because something not only was opened up in the wilderness as our country was formed from east to west, but baseball was formed with it. Did you know in 1830, Nashville and Shelbyville were about the same size? And Randolph, Tennessee, I have not really heard of it. If I had, I hadn't really remembered. In Tipton County, just north of Memphis, rivaled Memphis for the cotton trade on the Mississippi River. And even though Knoxville was founded in the late 18th century, the population of Knox County was about the same as Greene, Hawkins, and Monroe counties in 1830. And something I hadn't thought about either, did you know Chattanooga was not even a city until 1839? Poor roads caused most commerce to utilize rivers to move crops and other products to market. Tennessee is an agricultural state, and the four major cities, Nashville, Memphis, Knoxville, and Chattanooga, grew mostly because of river traffic. But rivers were not consistent, as steamboats had to deal with floods, droughts, water levels, and of course, traffic. So, what came along to speed up the process of growing cities? Well, it's railroads. But they did not come to our state easily. The American railroad mania began with the founding of the first passenger and freight line in the nation of the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad in 1827. And that year, the Tennessee legislature considered supporting lines from Memphis to cities as far away as Baltimore. But then they turned to supporting turnpikes instead. Remember, railroads were new, and not everyone understood what they could do. And the LaGrange and Memphis Railroad was the first to operate a train in Tennessee 15 years later in 1842. From that time, rail travel for passengers and goods began to grow, and the Nashville and Chattanooga Railroad completed a line in 1854, and in 1856, the East Tennessee and Georgia Railway connected Norfolk, Virginia to Chattanooga through Knoxville. And finally, the Memphis and Charleston Railroad, first conceived all the way back in 1827, was completed 30 years later in 1857. You may remember me talking about John Dickens. When he formed the Cumberland Baseball Club in 1866 in Nashville, the team challenged the Louisville Baseball Club to play a series of games. Well, why Louisville? Well, not only was Dickens familiar with the Louisville style of play, but Louisville was also easily accessible by train. And as rail travel continued for baseball in the major leagues, by 1876, game times were being scheduled to coincide with train schedules. Now, we have to remember that the South, as I said, was largely a wilderness in those days, and commerce was propelled on the back of the steamboats, yes, but largely railroads. Had rail service bypassed Nashville and Shelbyville been a hub between Alabama, Georgia, the Carolinas, and Kentucky, could the Bedford County have been the largest city in Tennessee and have become a member of the Southern League when it began in 1855? After all, way back in 1830, Davidson County had a smaller population than Bedford County. Now, I'm going to try to tie this up by giving you a little bit of information about the history of the original Southern League formed in 1885. Cities represented were both Memphis and Nashville, which were hotbeds for amateur play, and then Birmingham, Chattanooga, Columbus, Georgia, Atlanta, Macon, and Augusta became cities in that league. And can you see the progression? I'll tell you again. Memphis, Nashville, Birmingham, Chattanooga, Columbus, Georgia, Atlanta, Macon, and Augusta. Well, the progression is it follows the railroad lines. A year earlier, in 1884, when discussions began about forming a new league, there were representatives from Montgomery and New Orleans attending. Henry Grady of Atlanta was elected president, and even T.J. Botch of New Orleans was selected vice president. New Orleans, a city where horse racing was king, however, was left out the first year, and why do you think? One word, mileage. The owners were concerned about the expenses of rail travel. For example, the distance between Nashville and Augusta or Macon was about the same. Those were the league's southernmost cities, around 330 miles. But from Nashville to New Orleans is 200 additional miles, another 60%, which added up in travel mileage expense. And in that time, every opportunity to watch expenses was on the mind of the baseball people. For example, full-time umpires, there were four of them in that first year. There were four games played every day by eight teams, and each umpire was paid $75 per month and $3 per day for traveling expenses. Now, how much did teams charge fans to see a game in 1885? A quarter, 25 cents, although some cities had a few 50-cent seats, but they weren't always filled. And then the next year, in 1886, when Columbus and Birmingham dropped out, two new cities entered the league, Savannah and Charleston. Was it possible that Columbus and Birmingham dropped out because they were too far off the main line, and Savannah and Charleston were extensions to it? The third year of the Southern League in 1887, Birmingham returned, and finally New Orleans and Mobile did, because it made sense for transportation by rail to two nearby cities helped on expenses. But Chattanooga did not return, nor did Augusta and Atlanta, and mainly the reason for the loss of those teams was financial. And at the end of the 1887, even Nashville would drop out for the financial reasons, and they wouldn't even return to the Southern League until 1893. Through the 19th century, the Southern League went in and out of business, mainly because of financial reasons, and was firmly established in 1901 as the Southern Association, where it remained through 1961. Besides the major leagues, which also used railroads for a very long time, minor leagues were formed with cities where it made the most sense, and that meant rail travel was the most economical and thereby the most cost-effective means to get teams from one city to another. Now, I would not say travel by train was luxurious either, but it was as good as it could be as there were sleeping berths and there were cars for dining and drinking and entertainment. The veteran players got the bottom berths, and rookies would have been required to climb to the upper berth. And whether you slept up or down, though, both spots were uncomfortably warm because there was no air conditioning in those days. And ballplayers had their routines on the trains. On the long trips, they set up tables in their shared sleeping cars for playing cards. Phil Rizzuto often told how the camaraderie between teammates developed on train trips, and also finally recalled the food in dining cars. So we cannot overlook the importance of the railroad. As late as 1954, the American Association of Railroads reported that 90% of major league travel was done by train. Now, the first professional baseball team to travel by air was the Cincinnati Reds. They chartered an American Airlines DC-2 to travel to Chicago to face the Cubs on the 8th of June, guess when, 1934. But it was not until 1957 that a major league team purchased their own airplane for team travel, the Los Angeles Dodgers. In closing, I just want to remind everyone that when the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Milwaukee Braves came to Nashville, they were riding in a train together when they left spring training in Florida. And that was not unusual for two teams to play in different cities in exhibition games. They did it here in Nashville, I think, 5 or 6 straight years. And in the early days, that was the same. They would come by train, not always in the same berths in the same passenger cars, but the teams would be in different cars. But they would often have that camaraderie that Phil Rizzuto talked about, not only for their own team, but as players in a certain league. Now, remember when I said that a lot of the Major League Baseball schedules were set by the train schedule? Well, sometimes that works in reverse, too. In one instance, on July the 22nd in 1915, Nashville won in Atlanta over the Crackers by a score of 3-2. But the game was called after 7 innings so the Atlanta Ball Club can catch the train to Memphis. They had to be in Memphis the next night. And we all know when the train pulls out of the station, you better be on it. I think the train, the railroads had a big impact on baseball. It helped form leagues. It helped to determine which cities were going to participate in the league in the 19th century and then beyond. I think we owe the railroads a lot. I wish we still had more of them. I wish that we could still hop on a train every now and then. I've done that a few times, but not near enough. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this segment of Skip's Corner. If you'd like to write to me, send me a note at 262 Downright@gmail.com. Or certainly you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Instagram, too, under Skip's Corner. Just send me a note. Let me know how you like Skip's Corner episodes, if there's a subject that you'd like to talk about. I hope you'll continue to come back. I'm always grateful. I hope you'll come back again soon. Thank you.